The meeting is called to order. We do not have a quorum, so we cannot, actually I can't even call it to order, but we're going to start. And we can't approve the minutes yet because we do not have a quorum, but I'd like to, for those who are here, let you know that even though Representative Terry Morrow is presenting a bill in another committee, this is another one of his mastermind meetings like he did with All Day Kindergarten, and we're going to, because we have so many bills on the important topic of special ed, we're going to have the same sort of format that we did with All Day Kindergarten. We're going to hear from 6 testifiers, and then we will have each of 6 bill authors explain exactly what their bill does, but we won't have the redundant testimony because we don't have time for that. We have to end up having regular hearings for Representative Wardlow and Representative Erdahl. So we're going to spend the next hour on special ed, and then we will go to our last 2 bills. I'm going to call on Mr. Crow to explain before we do start some of the things that are in our packet, and then hopefully more members will be here to take advantage of Ms. Ingerson, who is our first testifier, and I think people will want to hear her in her new role. Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, there's one of the green folders just has some general information about special education for you to take a look at. The first piece of information is this chart that says special education bills, the kind of a summary of all the bills that you're hearing today, describing kind of common changes they make to the special education base, to the caps on special and excess cost education, and then the cost of those bills. And then finally, in the far right column, you all remember that we don't fully fund special education, even within our prorated formula, and so you can see a column at the end that compares how for 08-09 biennium these bills compare in terms of proration to the base of 76% funding for the existing special ed formulas. And then there's an orange map. That describes the special education cost subsidy in a dollars per pupil basis and a graphical nature. And a packet of information.
Oh, if you could just wait. All the people in the back of the room are having trouble hearing, and so if you could take your conversations out into the hallway, that would be greatly appreciated. Thank you, Representative Dabney. Mr. Crow, I'm sorry.
So, Madam Chair, as Mr. Crow was saying, the oranges shows the relative amount of the shortfall by school district. And then the third thing in your packet is an updated piece of information the Department of Education put together, which shows the special education funding trends. The important things here are the charts that show the amount of the proration or the amount that's not being funded currently. So for each bill, as you look back at those, you can see in this document what the percent of underfunding is.
Thank you very much. And I don't know if the people in the audience have the handouts or not, but I'm just going to hold this one up. And oh, you do. Okay. So you can see there's a lot of orange, and that cross-subsidy problem is what we're talking about today. So we could start with, I'm going to have 2 people come up at a time, so that will save us the running back and forth. So Ms. Ingerson and Superintendent Blazing, if you could both come forward to the table, and we'll have Ms. Ingerson first. They're smiling. They know each other. They like each other.
And friends.
Ms. Ingerson, it's so wonderful to see you again. Everyone, as you read in the paper, missed you at the forecast day, but we're glad to know that you've decided to put your talents into schools. Welcome.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Madam Chair and members, my name is Peggy Ingerson. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the City of the Minneapolis School District. And Madam Chair and members, I think that I would just really limit myself to some broad overview comments. I've just been at the Minneapolis School District for a couple of months, and we have some serious issues, like a lot of school districts in the state, trying to look at managing some of our costs. And in my somewhat early analysis of things, we started looking at our projections for the next school year and beyond, and really tried to zero in a little bit on the what I would consider the unsustainable costs, the costs that are going up that well in excess of revenues, and one of those is special education. And Madam Chair and members, I'm not here to speak at all about any of the specifics of the bills that are in front of you, but just generally to kind of make a pitch, I guess, to some extent for a little bit of the truth in budgeting, because to the extent that we have a significant cost subsidy, and to the extent that there are things that the costs in special education far exceed the revenues that we actually get for it, it means that, in fact, there is this cost subsidy, and to the extent that we talk about things like other initiatives, whether it be all-day kindergarten, high school reform, some of the other things that we really want to try to target, all of our efforts at those kinds of things are diminished to the extent that we don't adequately fund special education. And a little bit of our particular problem in the Minneapolis School District is that while we, like many other school districts, face a decline in student enrollment overall, it's not really among our special ed population. So in fact, what's occurring is the students that need special education services are a growing proportion of our overall student body, our overall enrollment. So in fact, that causes that cost subsidy to grow. And so, again, Madam Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee and would just kind of make a pitch for beginning to tackle that cross subsidy with direct funding appropriations for special education. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dinkinson. If you could stay right there, and we'll hear from Superintendent Blazing, and then before you sit down, if there's any questions for either of you, and we'll do the same with the next two and then the next two. Welcome. If you could please restate your name, Superintendent Blazing.
Thank you, Representative Grayling. Superintendent Ted Blazing, White Bear Lake Area Schools. I've also been in my position just a few months, my 15th year in White Bear. And Peggy and I have this highly orchestrated story to tell. She painted with a broad brush. I'm going to paint with a little finer brush. I'm going to talk about one student in our school district, student Y. This morning I talked about student X. This afternoon I'm talking about student Y. Don't infer anything chromosomal about this student. We'll just call the student Y. Smart, mainstreamed in high school classes, likely to pursue post-secondary education. College, university setting is certainly in student Y's offing. Student Y is a junior in our high school today, attending classes as we speak. High aspirations. In fact, student Y has accessed a number of our advanced placement courses while in high school. Student Y does receive specialized services for his or her disability. Coaching and mentoring is much needed, especially in social skills. Special education support is absolutely necessary in the regular classrooms. Interpreters and captionists have been in the students' backgrounds. Student Y's parents have taken advantage of their rights bestowed upon them by the system. Now let me just, now I've told you a little bit about student Y. Let me talk a little bit about the expenses and then the lag in collecting the money for those expenses and the shortfall for the total cost for the student. As I mentioned, student Y has been specialized mainstream classes 3 out of 4 periods. Now I'm talking about the 2004-2005 school year, 2 years ago, when the student was a freshman. Sports services were provided for 3 of those 4 periods. Special education instruction, including a resource room, special ed teacher, speech and language clinician, counselors, psychologists, other support services, special education coordinator time to consult and assist in due process, and our director of special education time who handled an NDE complaint, Department of Human Rights complaint, and certainly consultation with legal counsel. The expenses for that single student, 2004-2005, to the exact dollar amount, $134,350. Expenses this year, student Y, now as a junior in high school. We anticipate the expenses, if student Y stays with us through the end of the year, at $192,764. We'll receive reimbursement for those expenses encountered in 2004-2005 sometime this year, and we expect those reimbursements to total $48,694. Oops, a gap of $85,656 that's picked up by the general fund. Certainly, our foundation aid covered regular education expenditures, covered 68% of the salaries for our White Bear Lake special education staff reimbursement, did not cover 32% of the special ed staff salaries, 100% of staff benefits, and as we know, that's perhaps the most inflationary piece of most school districts' budgets, 100% of district's 916 intermediate school district that provides services for unreimbursed costs, building office staff costs, legal fees, etc. We anticipate if the legislation as it stands today stays in place with prorations, we anticipate being short $144,070 2 years from now when we begin to recover the cost for this current year of 06-07. What does that mean on a broader basis for our school district? Obviously smaller than Minneapolis, but yet one that has incurred some rough financial times over these last 5 years in particular. We've made a total of $9,950,000 of budget adjustments. We have approximately 8,400 students, to put that into perspective. We went to our voters last November and asked for an extension and expansion of our operating levy. That was defeated. We were asking for an expansion that would have amounted to $3.6 million. We have a special education cross subsidy for fiscal year 05 of $4.8 million. So you can see what we were asking the voters for was basically an amount a little less than what our cross subsidy amount amounted to. What does that mean over this time? We've made budget cuts, but that really doesn't tell anything. Those are numbers. What's happened is we've reduced one course offering from every high school student by mandating a study hall, one class period. We've eliminated one class period for every middle school student, and with that left world language for our middle school students. We eliminated assurance of mastery programs aimed at elementary students who are in regular education but need additional help, in the hope that it would offset future need for special education. That was eliminated. And over the last 5 years, 73 of our regular education teaching staff. Next year, average class sizes 28, 34, 35.5, elementary, middle, and senior high. So I mentioned now in my 15th year, and I want to use a little bit of parable about the frog in the pot of boiling water that you've all heard before. It seems to me over my 15 years, the temperature of the water in the pot has increased significantly. Part of it being this recognition now of the huge hole that we've created called special education cross subsidy that's taking away services for all kids to fulfill the mandates that we're confronted with, be they federal or state. We're not here to talk about the needs. I think that even with student Y, we're meeting the needs of the youngsters that should be met. It's simply a matter of the funding, and we need to fill this hole that we've created called special education cross-subsidy. With that, Representative Browning.
Thank you, Representative Blazing. And Representative McFarland has filled us in quite well before you got here in earlier meetings about the situation in White Bear Lake.
We've trained her well.
Yes, you have.
I mean, she's learned much from us.
Representative Broccolo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome back. Do I still call you Commissioner or not?
Commissioner Ingerson.
I mean, because once you earn the title, you get to keep it, right? Is that
Commissioner Ingerson.
Madam Chair, Representative, you can call me whatever you'd like.
Thank you.
Representative Rappo, no, you can.
And I'm speaking in a more general sense, in your opinion, you have experience in finance. You're aware of the many demands we have placed on us in this committee for new programs, funding existing programs. In a general sense, would you say that it is better for us to fund existing promises we have made or to allocate those dollars for new entitlements and new programs?
Commissioner Ingerson.
Madam Chair and Representative, I think that I could answer that it's best to fund the programs that are in place first before starting new programs or funding new programs. I think in particular what we have is situations where expectations get created, and I think for all of you are familiar with the situation that occurs when expectations are created at a particular level. And if we say, oh, we have new funding to do some new things, then everybody's expectation goes up when, in fact, much of the new funding is needed to cover existing costs. So I guess, Madam Chair, members, I would say in response to the question, it would be more appropriate to fund obligations that we've already created.
Representative Rockwell.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, does the Minneapolis School District offer all-day kindergarten?
Madam Chair, Representative, we have all-day kindergarten in most schools, but we still have waiting lists of families that are interested in all-day K and that are not enrolled.
Thank you.
Thank you. Either one of you, I'd like to know, if you were prioritizing in order special education, money on the formula, all-day kindergarten, or early childhood, what would be your top two things? Superintendent Blazing.
Representative Bradley, if you're forced to prioritize, I would add option E, which is to expand our thinking to greater resources. However, that wasn't your question.
I like that option too.
Looking
for Representative Rothwell does not. He's still raising gas taxes. Gas, you know, I think students are more important myself. But that's for another day. Superintendent Blazing.
How did I find myself defending this one? However, I would agree. I think first of all we need to fill the hole that exists. And we need to provide money for early childhood family education. I would love to have all-day kindergarten in our school district. And we need help on the foundation fund that as well. So all four are important. But first and foremost, I believe we need to backfill this hole that we've created. We can't...
Mm-hmm.
I want to see our schools improve in significant ways. And I want to see our high schools change and improve in significant ways. But it's a little like... building, as someone said the other day, it's more like building a staircase from the top down. I don't think that's the way we need to do it.
Thank you. Ms. Ingeson.
Madam Chair, I would respond to that question much the way I responded to the earlier question. I think that when we talk about prioritizing funding, when, in fact, we're not recognizing obligations that we have, even if we say, here's some new funding for the general education formula, and people expect that those are funds that are available to all students, if we say, here's funding for all-day kindergarten, here's funding for early childhood, all of which we think are very important programs as we focus with our at plan in the Minneapolis School District to really be very aggressive about improving the achievement gap in Minneapolis, all of those things are very important. But I think when I think about the fact that funding those other things, funding special education is really a recognition of obligations and money that is being taken away from some of those other programs now, realistically. So in a sense, funding an obligation that where we have this cross-subsidy really does allow us to have some funding to use for those other kinds of purposes, managing to get at that cross-subsidy. And Madam Chair, if as long as I have the floor for another minute, I'd just like to make another point. One of the things that we're working really hard to do in the Minneapolis District is to try to get a handle on some of our costs. And as we really look at the services that we provide to children in our districts and kids in our schools, and we try to manage to some extent the special education costs, we have situations where a family might not be particularly satisfied when we say, here's a program that exists that we think fits your need, and they decide to open enroll in another school district. And then they get exactly what services they want, and they the other school district sends us the bill. So as we struggle to attempt to manage some of our costs, it's had the opposite effect of actually increasing the cost that we pay to other districts for the special ed services.
Thank you very much. There's one more question before you go, and this is the last question. Representative Heidkirchen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if the Commissioner could answer a question. Hampton County, how many students are there over 18 years of age that are signed up for special ed?
Ms. Ingeson.
Madam Chair, Representative Heidkirchen, I am not sure that I know the answer to that question. I'll certainly do my best to try to provide you with that information.
Representative Heidkirchen.
Precisely a point. Hennepin County has 1,314 students, to be exact, that are taking special ed programs because there's a program called Day Programs for Adults with Disabilities. Their program was frozen. Because of that, because the slots were frozen, Representative Grayling, you helped me with the Head Start. Remember, we had the slots issue there. Mm-hmm. There's the same issue having to do with daycare. And Representative Huntley has a bill called 705 that addresses that issue, and we have referred to option E. Here's your option E. Representative Huntley's got a bill of allocating more money for the COLAs to take care of that. Right now, you're having parents sign up their children in the after-school system that are over 18 years of age for more programs in special ed. When these could be better met without education monies within the Department of Health and Human Services. So just, and I thought I'd mention that here, it's very important that Representative Huntley's got a bill 705 that all of you that are in education, if you're looking for more money for education, this is an opportunity to free up those slots so that these people, there's a guarantee when they, after they leave 18 years of age in the Minneapolis school system, they go to those facilities, they guarantee training and employment. Right now they can be involved in special ed until they're 21 and a half years of age, who are released into society with no training. There's better ways of doing it. And I think that within the special ed sector, we're spending a lot of money within 41 counties. We have 4,299 students that could be in these programs rather than within our school systems. Option E, there's your answer. But I just thought I'd bring that out. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Heidkirchen. And thank you, too, very much. We're honored to have you here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
While the next two are coming up, Mary Ruprecht and Gary Lewis. Mary has a substitute presenter. Okay, we'll let that person come up and introduce themselves. And in the meanwhile, could I have a motion to approve the minutes? Representative Faust moves approval of the minutes of March 6th, and I will actually call the meeting to order, I guess, first. I call the meeting to order, and now we have the minutes to be approved for March 6th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. And are you Mr. Lewis?
Yes.
All right, and Mary is not here, is that right?
I'm here. He's speaking for her.
Oh, you're just speaking and Mary's not. Got it.
Correct.
Okay, thank you, Representative McFarland. I'm slow, but...
Found that
out. Okay, all right. Welcome, Mr. Lewis, and if you could state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives, my name is Gary Lewis. I'm the Director of Student Services for Northfield Public Schools, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education. I've included a handout that should be before you, which represents actually Northfield Public Schools and shows to some extent the impact that the current funding dilemma is having on smaller schools. This current year, just looking at the existing formula, and I'm not about to argue that the current formula is adequate, because as you've heard, it does not include fringe benefits, which is a huge growing issue for us. But simply based on the existing formula, Northfield Public Schools this year is going to be shorted some $516,000 in the basic special ed formula, and we're anticipating another $100,000+ in the excess cost formula. When you add in the cost of tuition billing that was just mentioned, that total rises to over $750,000 for Northfield Public Schools, or the equivalent of 15 regular classroom teachers, because it's from the general education budget that shortfall is made up. But what concerns me more than the financial cost is the cost that this is having upon the children and the parents with special needs. Everyone in our community, when they found out that the foundation was going up the past 2 years, wanted to know what we were going to add back, what was going to be added to our system. And the reality is, we cut and we went for a levy referendum. And when people asked, well, where did the money go? Unfortunately, one of the main answers was to pay for the special education debt. The foundation aid grew because we took out a credit card and billed it to special education. Now what's happening is that parents across our district concerned about their students in regular ed are starting to ask the question, what's wrong with special ed? They're not asking what's wrong with the funding system, they're asking what's wrong with special ed. And what I'm seeing on some of the blogs locally is, why are we supporting those kids anyway? And we can't go there. Those are our children. They're our responsibility. Creating this debt is taking several steps back for the gains that have been made for children and adults with disabilities. We cannot continue to go down this path. I'd also refer you to the back of the chart. I've tried to give you an example of what the real cost of this is like. I've taken a hypothetical teacher who makes $50,000, estimated that their fringes cost 30% of their salary, which is fairly common, and so the total cost of that teacher is $65,000. The current formula, however, covers only the salary, the $50,000. But as Superintendent Blazing talked about, it's based on what was spent 2 years ago. I'm assuming for this model that there's been a 4% increase. I'm going to subtract $4,000. And the formula then is based not on the current salary of $50,000, but on the prior salary of $46,000. If you take the 68% formula and then apply the adjustment factor, what we find is that the reimbursement is actually $24,783. And when you compare that to the real cost of that employee, we're being reimbursed at 38.13%. This is a real problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. I think we get it now if we didn't before. Thank you very much. Members, are there any questions for Mr. Lewis? Thank you very much, Mr. Lewis. If the next two testifiers could come down, Mackenzie Erickson and Don Skygoth. I'll see if I'm pronouncing that right. It's another EI name. And Mackenzie, you're on the list first. So if you could restate your name for the record and then give us your testimony and welcome.
Hi, my name is Mackenzie Erickson, and I am a high school senior at Southwest. I am here speaking on behalf of other students in special ed with disabilities, and I'm also a member of the International Dyslexia Association. I am the student body president at Southwest High School. I take IB classes and AP classes, and I have dyslexia. I have severe dyslexia, which, for those who don't know, it's a neurologically based learning disability. So, I don't know, you use language all the time, so it affects me a lot. And I am in favor of this bill. I think that this money is very important because I have seen the struggles and the trouble that has happened because of lack of money. There are so many students that know what they need to succeed and they're not able to get it because there isn't enough money. I've been told that I can't have what I need to succeed because of money, and, you know, after a fight, you can get opportunities to show your potential, but it takes a lot of work, and I think so many students give up and so many students drop out because they don't have the force behind them that I do. there are so many resources out there, and if there was more money for special ed, teachers would be able to have higher training. They'd be more educated about continuing the teach. I'm just going to talk more specifically to dyslexia. They would be able to teach reading throughout the grades. Students are taught how to read through like fourth grade, but then the phonics don't continue, and it's so important. Everybody needs, no matter what your learning style is, no matter if you have a disability or not, everybody needs to continue to learn actually how to read, and there's just more complicated words. So that's so important. Early intervention is so important, and if teachers were more highly trained, they would be able to see the early signs in kindergarten and first grade. I was diagnosed in third grade because they had to wait for me to fail, and that was, you know, several years where I could have been receiving services, and I could have, you know, been, who knows, like, what my potential is, where I could be now a couple years more ahead in my reading grade level. Also, because of money, the schools are so segregated, and I'm doing a personal project for Southwest. I'm doing some research, and I've gone around to the different special ed programs at Southwest, and when I walk into the classrooms, the teachers are so happy to see me because they just haven't seen, I mean, Southwest, I think, is particularly divided, but they just haven't seen someone that's not in special ed, quote unquote. But then when I tell them I am, they know they're surprised. But it's just, it's so sad that you walk into some of those programs and the kids have no hope and they're not mainstream at all. And I think really what they need to succeed is to be mainstream and just have that social connection and to learn the same material that their peers are learning. So because of funding, it's easier to just divide people, but, I mean, segregation, it's an issue that we've all always struggled with in education. I mean, I know two students are homeschooled. It's just the system, it really, if there was more money, we would be able to integrate, have equal education, and children would be able to succeed. So I have succeeded because I fought for what I knew I needed, and I think if there's more money, kids will be able to succeed as I have.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson. Obviously, you're an example of these buttons that say special education works. Thank you very much. Ms., is it Steigoff?
Steigoff.
I'm pronouncing it right. Very good. All right. EI, I love it.
Madam Chairman, my name is Dawn Steigoff, and I just want to point out that this is the coalition's handout, and all of the disability organizations that are part of the coalition are listed at the bottom of the handout. And I am the parent of a 15-year-old son with autism, and I just want to talk a little bit about what the lack of funding looks like in the classroom. Special education teachers' caseloads have become unmanageable. I recently saw a teacher who told me her caseload had doubled from last year. Teachers do not have the time to modify curriculum, provide visual supports, learn to operate assistive technology, develop and implement behavior plans, and provide direct teaching. There is no time for them to meet with other staff on the team or to communicate with parents. Now, if you have a child like mine who's having a two-hour meltdown after school because of something that happened at school, and he has a very limited ability to communicate, it's rather essential I know what happened, not only to get him out of the meltdown, but also so they can prevent it the next day. He'll have an incident at school for them if I don't address it, so I absolutely have to have communication. Many of our students' needs require additional skills than what teachers learn in college. Teachers often have limited knowledge of a student's disability. For example, many schools are struggling to provide staff with the necessary skills to effectively teach students with autism. Districts do not have the resources to help their staff acquire skills and knowledge needed. While the peer support for students is supposed to be provided based on needs, the reality is that because of budget constraints, the ratios are too high. This is often one peer supporting 3 to 4 students in a classroom. When the supports are missing, whether it's a modified curriculum, a communication system, or the support of an adult, it affects the ability of every student in that room to learn. When our students go to a classroom in a 1 to 4 support if one student needs to leave, then the other three also have to leave, which limits their ability to progress in the general education curriculum. I have been in special ed rooms that are so understaffed for their needs of students that I have honestly wondered how the staff goes back the next day. I remember one teacher that every day I was there, she was never able to take her lunch break. The shortage of staff has made it so that often teachers struggle just to keep students safe with limited time for academics. When we have a system of teachers with too many students on their caseloads, unmet training needs, and too high a student-to-staff ratio, our students with disabilities are not receiving appropriate education. Many of our students develop behaviors because of this, and frustrated staff place them in timeout rooms or suspend them. This reduces the amount of instructional time for special ed students, and the gap between their performance and their peers grows wider. I am asking you to pass this bill so that our schools can support, begin to resolve these problems, and let teachers do their job of educating our children to the highest potential. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Steigarp. Any questions? Thank you very, very much. I guess Representative Morrow has left again. I was going to try one more time to thank him for this format, but he's gone again. Representative Benson, if you could go to the table. We're now going to have each bill author tell us exactly what their bill does to address the problems that we've just had laid out so well for us. Representative Benson, you can
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move my bill, House File 841, for possible inclusion in the Omnibus K-12 Finance Bill.
Representative Benson moves House File 841 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Bill. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill, which was written a while ago, got after the issue, I think, is at the nub of many of these problems, which is the fact that the state, in its wisdom, chose to leave the established practice of a program growth factor, leaving it up to the wiles of the political conflicts each biennium. And I see that my bill is more moderate, really, as far as the numbers of dollars that I'm proposing than most others. And that doesn't mean that I think that this is adequate. My objective in presenting this bill was to enforced upon the committee, my view, that we ought to go back to a growth factor. That's the most important issue that I'm trying to present here. And so I think with that, I'm going to try to ingratiate myself with the chair, because I've noticed that when some other members of the committee do not do so, they get themselves into hot water very fast.
Reps of Benson, you are such a wise learner.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Is there any testimony?
Questions?
Is there any testimony for or against the bill in the audience?
I did not ask for any.
Okay, thank you. Right. All the testifiers were for all of these bills, so the authors aren't planning it, but I just wanted to see if there's anybody unplanned. So, very good. Representative, thank you very much. That was very good, Representative Benson.
I hope I get some credit, Madam
You
Chair.
Get extra credit, very much. Representative Brown.
The day.
Please move your bill.
I'm moving House File 833 for layover and possible inclusion into the Omnibus Bill.
Representative Brown moves House File 833 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Bill. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I want to thank the testifiers for the information that you provided and the stories that you've shared with us today. The stories were similar to those that my superintendent shared with me not too long ago. I had asked him, you know, if he could wave a magic wand, what were the things that we could do for education, and I guarantee you that funding special ed was one of his top choices. House File 833 moves us in the right direction. This bill is intended to do three things. It is it's to set the special education appropriation caps at a current expenditure level. In 2007, that would mean an additional $122 million in 08. 165 and in 09, 199. It restores the special education aid growth factor to 4.6%, starting in 08, and it's also restoring the excess cost growth factor to 2%. So this is restoring promises we've made. It's about keeping our promises to public education and the purposes that the legislator and proposes that the legislator fund these promises that we've made to pass special education before we fund new programs in the future.
Any questions for Representative Brown? Representative
Craft. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Brown, you, kind of a theme I've been echoing the last couple of days about, and you kind of finished up with those comments that keeping our promises versus creating new ones. Same question I guess I asked Commissioner Ingerson, and I'll be a little bit more specific on it, and that is that in a world of limited resources, when we're prioritizing, is it better that we put dollars into the special ed program, or if we create a new middle class entitlement like all day kindergarten? I made my preference clear on where I'm at. What are your
Representative
thoughts? And of course, Representative Brown, before I call on you, since it's not a question about your bill, you know, you can say you're for everything at this point until we find out how much money there is and deflect Representative Grafflow's question, but if you choose to answer it, clearly you can do that as well. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. and I too would love to ingratiate myself to the chair, and I will defer the question.
Thank you. Any questions about Representative Brown's bill? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Crow, in light of the fact that Representative Brown has dollars for this school year, how is that handled then by the department?
Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, and members, generally we don't appropriate money for 2007. We do have a bill that we separately make forecast adjustments for 2007. Mm-hmm. If the committee chose to make a 2007 appropriation, it would, in terms of a target, it would have the effect of subtracting that same dollar amount off of the target from 07. It would just kind of come out of the 08-09 target. But in general, when the bills get passed, they don't have 07 appropriations mm-hmm. in them. So.
Thank you very much, Representative Erickson. Seeing no other questions, thank you. Representative Brown renews her motion. House Bill 833 is laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And I think I forgot to do that for Representative Benson's bill, so we'll just have that one, House File 841, laid over also for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Appreciate it.
I'm sure he would like that. All right, Representative McFarland.
I want to give my compliments to this chair, as always.
Thank you, Representative Benson, and Representative McFarland gets extra points because she ran up to the table to save time.
Representative McFarland. Chair, I would like to introduce House File 1318 for inclusion in the omnibus bill. I'm going to be positive here.
Representative McFarland moves House File 1318 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative McFarland.
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for hearing my bill. What this bill does is, originally, for clerical reasons, there was a two-year lag in payment on base special ed funding to school districts. And what this bill would do, well, things have changed now. We have technology and things run more efficiently. And so there's no reason why we technically need to wait for 2 years anymore to get our payments to our district. And I believe this is the very least we can do, and I hope that this would be the base of what we would be doing and adding on more special ed funding with other bills. Anyway, I thought possibly Dr. Blazing could explain to you how this would affect not only our district in White Bear, but other districts in the state.
Thank you, Superintendent Blazing.
Madam Chair, it's always beautiful for a superintendent to respond to one of their school board members, but even more so to respond to their representative now serving here.
You're under double pressure.
Yeah, it's a double, yeah. But Representative McFarland is correct. The lag in funding of 2 years historically made sense. It no longer makes sense today. We can do this. And I pointed out in an illustration with one student, but let me make two additional points. Our special education cross subsidy 3 years ago, I believe, was $4.2 million. We anticipate that this year, that cross subsidy will approach $6 million. By delaying the payment for 2 years, not only are we not funding that total deficit, but we're also delaying what is an ever increasing amount. To the point that, and I don't believe our district is too terribly different from any other of the 340 districts in the state of Minnesota, total amount that we expend for special education now exceeds the total amount that we expend for elementary education. We spend more on special education than we do educating every youngster from kindergarten through grade five. Hence the need to obviously not only pay the bill, but please pay it on time.
So did you say that last statement again? I think we all should remember that. We spend more on special education than...
Our school district, approximately a little over 8,000 students. 3,700 of those are in kindergarten through fifth grade. We spend slightly more than $16 million. We serve approximately a little less than 1,200 students in special education, and we expend $16 million for special ed and slightly less than $15 million for K-5. We spend more for special education services than we spend on elementary education.
Okay.
We spend more to provide services for our special education youngsters than we do for everyone in grades kindergarten through grade five today. Mm-hmm. Again, are we unique on that? I don't believe so, but that's a little factoid that we teased out of our budget when preparing for this today.
And thank you, and that's a memorable factoid.
Wow.
And at this time, I'd like to ask Mr. Strom if maybe he could explain the financial implications of it, or Mr. Crowe, whichever was
it. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, on this bill, the process that was used to create the new number that goes in as the base number was to take the growth in special education expenditures for the last 2 years and grow the base by those 2 years of the statewide growth. And the cost is about approximately $60 million per year for fiscal years 2008 and 2009.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Strom, this is the governor's proposal, is it not?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, no. The governor's proposal was to go to the current year base instead of the second prior year base, but to not adjust the funding by that growth in expenditures, but rather to put a 2% per year growth on the funding.
That's right.
So the governor's proposal does go to the current year base instead of the 2 year prior base, but the funding increase is the old funding plus 2%.
Thank you. Representative McFarland is more generous than the governor. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern and my question is, and I agree with the previous testifier that talked about how these are our kids and we need to do what we can for them. My question is there another way to do this that's more efficient or better or something other than just continue to throw more and more money at this? Anybody have any ideas?
Superintendent Blazing.
Madam Chair, Representative Faust, I can assure you that in a district that's been under constant fiscal pressures, we look at every efficiency possible. The only solution that I would offer up sitting here now, beyond federal laws, is for the state of Minnesota to more closely align our requirements with the federal requirements under special education law. Are there needs for these youngsters? Absolutely. In fact, I'm very proud of our delivery of services for these youngsters. Do we disagree with parents many times? Absolutely. But that's part of the process of attempting to provide services for every special need youngster. But I wish I could sit here and say, yeah, here are the following five efficiencies we can put into place and drive down our costs and still meet the needs of the youngsters. I can't sit here today and say that.
And Superintendent Blazing, Representative Faust will talk to you afterwards about the SCRED program in his district.
Absolutely.
For prevention of numbers of special education students.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Murphy, and then we'll go back to Representative McFarland. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair. I would like a clarification. I get 8,000 students, grades 1 through 5?
No. Superintendent Blazing.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy. 8,500 students total, 3,700 kindergarten through fifth grade, a little less than 1,200 receiving special ed services. 1,200 receiving special ed services could, of course, range in age from age 2 or age 3 to age 21, as was pointed out earlier.
Mm-hmm. And Superintendent Blazing, it's always very smart to arm Representative Murphy with facts, because once she knows a problem, she's dogged. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Superintendent, 7,300 students are not special needs students.
That's
Superintendent Blazing.
I'm sure Representative Murphy, that would be correct. We agree on the math.
All right. Pass that part.
Rep. Murphy.
Mr. Strom, do you have any idea, is this a typical number?
Mr. Strom.
Across the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, if you look at the map that was in your packet that shows the special education distributions, you can see that the costs do vary by district, the unfunded costs do vary by district. And in general, I think you'll find that a district like the White Bear Lake School District is a relatively high-cost district. So their situation is perhaps a little above average on a statewide basis. That, as you can see from that map, the districts that are darker colored are those with the higher unfunded costs. But I believe in terms of where White Bear Lake falls that there are higher than average special education spending districts.
Representative McFarland, closing comments.
Yes, Madam Chair, I was going to respond to part of that, though. I think Representative Hawes had brought up a bill earlier about the 30 districts in the state that were affected more because of the nearness to medical facilities. And I'll address also in White Bear, we do have a declining enrollment in our regular ed program, but a rise in enrollment in special education. And that is for students from birth to 21. And I also think that we need to keep in mind that these are not necessarily students with mild learning disabilities. We're talking about severely challenged and medically fragile people from birth to 21. And anecdotally, I have heard from two sets of parents about 4 years ago that they moved to White Bear Lake because we had a great special education program and their doctor recommended they move here. And these are not the children that are with mild disabilities. I also talked to a realtor last October who told me he moved a family from Mankato to White Bear Lake because of our special ed program. So I just wanted to bring that up. And I would hope that we wouldn't move. You have to move it, I guess.
I'll move. House File 1318 has been moved for possible consideration, and we'll now lay it over for possible consideration in the omnibus bill. Roseville Schools has been like that to us, and I know other districts are as far as magnets for.
Right.
When you have a good program, they come. Representative Dabney has two bills.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I believe on the agenda they are in reverse numerical order.
Okay, Representative Dabney, which bill would you choose to move first?
Well, why don't we stay that way? I'd like to move House File 1084 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the K-12 omnibus bill.
Representative Dabney moves House File 1080 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Dabney.
Thank you. Madam Chair, this is a wee little simple bill that lifts the cap on special education funding that was put in place for the 2004 fiscal year and created the proration that the administrator from Northfield walked us through with his example of how much special ed funding his district actually receives at the end of the day. So 1084 lifts that cap and then also increases the funding that the state would provide from 68% of salary to 75% of salary, which is just in line with growing inflation in special education costs. It's kind of an honesty in budgeting approach.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. I'm sure Representative Grapple is sure to like that because he likes honesty in budgeting and not having any shifts or anything of the sort. Is there any public testimony on this bill? Don't see any members on the list, so thank you, Representative Dabney. Your next bill.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 977 to be before the committee for possible inclusion.
Representative Dabney, move House File 977 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, you said it better than I should have. 977 provides a two-pronged approach to the challenge of covering the cost of special education students for school districts. First, it caps school districts' costs at $35,000, with the state covering all costs incurred above that cap. Districts remain eligible for all aids attributed to the child below that cap. This aspect is particularly helpful, while it's helpful for all districts, it's particularly actually helpful for smaller districts in greater Minnesota that may be more heavily impacted in terms of their budget by one or two high-need, very expensive students coming into the district. Secondly, House File 977 reinstates the special ed growth factor that was repealed in 2003, returning it to the previous 1.046. The previous state auditor, Auditor Anderson, had determined the special education rates are growing at a pace above inflation, and that this growth factor assists districts in that fact.
Thank you very much. I don't see any members on the list. Is there any public testimony?
Madam Chair, I'll leave the committee with a factoid. In Minneapolis, the special ed cross subsidy is, if memory serves, $668 per student. In my daughter's school, one classroom then represents over $22,000 in cross subsidy. Imagine what we could do if we reversed those cross subsidies and provided districts with the funding promised, and then let them use their creativity to provide programming and opportunities for their students.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. That is a very memorable factoid as well. House file...
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. House file 977 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and Representative Brown, taking her cue from Representative McFarland, is racing to the table. Representative Brown...
Madam Chair, I move House File 981 to be included in the, to be possibly included in the omnibus bill.
Representative Brown moves House File 981 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Brown.
House File 981 is intended to fully fund special education's revenue formulas and make an appropriation for special education to have a special education aid open and standing. The bill is going to do two things. It bases special education reimbursements on IEPs rather than on per pupil enrolled basis, and this is kind of speaks to Representative Dancy's bill as well. This prevents declining enrollment districts from unnecessarily losing revenue because of the enrollment decline. It also fully funds both the basic and the excess cost special education formula. Make special education an open and standing appropriation. House File 981, it complements the catch-up work that would be done with House File 833 by making sure that we are moving forward. The special education funding remains current because special education funding is made open and standing.
Thank you, Representative Brown. I think members can tell that we've been crescendoing with the big fixes, the smaller fixes to the bigger fixes for what we can do about this problem. And Representative Brown has brought us the final solution. Is there any testimony on this bill? My husband says I occasionally get my analogies mixed, so, you know. Any questions from members? Representative Brown, thank you very much. House File 981 will be laid over
for
inclusion in the omnibus bill. And if Representative Marr were here, we would tell him it worked out perfectly. We're 1 minute ahead of schedule due to his marvelous planning and the marvelous planning of the authors. Thank you all very, very much. We now have Representative Erdahl and Representative Wardlow. Representative Wardlow, are you feeling okay to keep with the committee order, or would you like to go ahead of Representative Erdahl? He says it's okay. All right, Representative Erdahl. Welcome to the committee, and do you have a mover of your bill, or should I move it?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and feel free to move it.
I will move House File 1057 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome, Representative Erdahl. It's nice to have you back in education.
Nice to be here. Thank you. I prefer probable inclusion.
Okay, probable. All right.
By the way, I knew student Y. He has too many questions. Come on. That's why I had to leave. That's why I was seventh grade for 34 years.
Representative Erdahl, that's why we miss you.
All right.
And welcome to Representative Peterson as well. Representative Erdahl will explain to us why she is here.
Place the crew here.
Yeah, I guess so.
Representative Peterson has a another file that's exactly the same as this one, so we're sharing the bill here
well,
in bipartisan,
Representative Peterson.
Bipartisan fashion. Quickly, this bill deals with induction for new teachers. Our new and beginning teachers need some help. About one half of every five new teachers quit the profession within 5 years, and we particularly have difficulty attracting and keeping new teachers in high-need subject areas and high-need schools. This bill offers a helping hand to new teachers in needed areas It will encourage education service providers to offer teaching models, mentors, and other ways to help them succeed in those first critical years of the classroom. A new teacher induction program is established in 1057 to assist new elementary and secondary teachers in high need subject areas or schools. And with that, Representative Peterson, do you have any?
Representative Peterson, welcome.
Thank you very much. And as he explained, we had a clone bill. And so this is a bipartisan effort to say that one of the biggest needs that we have is to assure that our beginning teachers not only get in a good induction period that will encourage them to stay in the profession, but also help them to be able to address the classroom needs in a much better manner and help address the achievement gap that we're all trying to deal with. And I think this is just an exciting bill and a real opportunity to expand what some of the existing induction programs, we have them scattered around some districts, but this really will provide an opportunity to make them more accessible to many more districts and many more beginning teachers. And I did explain in my other committee that there was an Aspen Institute held recently with countries, eight other countries from all from around the world. And the things they talked about were how do we deal with making the profession of teaching even better. And, of course, one whole section was dedicated to the induction process. And they all noted that the most essential thing in a classroom is a teacher. A teacher who has had the background, the training, and the kind of mentoring and assistance that will help them to be excellent. And so this is a particular bill that will help initiate that same kind of program in this state. With that?
Okay, and Representative Erdahl, Representative Peterson, before we go to your testifiers, just so you can all have a sense of the clock, we will conclude this hearing at 3:30. Representative Wardlow has three testifiers as well, so you're each getting 15 minutes. So if you want to get everybody in, you have to judge your time accordingly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I suggest that each of them about a minute should do.
Perfect.
So.
Sounds great.
We have Debbie Lidke from the Department of Education.
Ms. Lidke, welcome, and please respect your name.
Madam Chair, representatives, thank you for letting us talk about something that we're passionate about, which is teacher induction. I appreciated the comments about...
Could you also state your name for the paper?
Debbie Lidke from Minnesota Department of Education. I oversee the first five mentorship program. It does take 3 to 5 years to have a teacher move from novice teacher to becoming highly effective. And a teacher induction program supports a teacher in that process, but also can accelerate that growth, not needing 3 to 7 years to become highly effective. What is a comprehensive induction program? It mainly is four things. It's mentoring, it's professional learning, it's support, and it's feedback on instruction. It also is tied directly to the student's the teacher's practice and student learning. I oversaw the first five mentorship program, and I provide you three items that you may oversee at your review as time allows. First is a brochure about the first five mentorship program. The second is a description of what a comprehensive induction program is. And the third are some PowerPoint slides that define the need and the effects of a powerful teacher induction program. So please take some time to review that. The three-year program that I had the privilege of overseeing took place in three areas of the state: Northwest Minnesota, Southwest Minnesota, and Metro Twin Cities. And it was a regionally delivered model, and that it crossed district lines in a sense of resources, mentoring, and programs. I have the luxury of having three people that participate in that program, and I'd like to have you hear their stories.
Thank you very much.
My name is Eric Vernon. I'm an ESL teacher at Pilot Knob Elementary School in the West St. Paul, Mendota Heights District. This is my third year teaching, my first year in the program. The program has provided me with a great resource in my mentor. As the only ESL teacher in my building, it's been great to connect with another ELL resource in the district. Together, we've done a lot of planning, and through observations, me observing her and her observing me, we've been able to improve my teaching, improve the practice that I do in the classroom that I think has contributed to greater success for my students. Also, the connection at the Department of Education has been invaluable, the connection to resources, ESL specialists at the state level. Excuse me. And also, time, which is the most important thing for a young teacher, is the time that you have to actually sit down and plan out lessons and plan with an experienced teacher has been just an invaluable resource.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vernon.
Good afternoon. My name is Rob Rand, and I'm a sixth grade teacher at Cedar Manor Intermediate Center in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. This year, I'm in my fourth year of teaching. My involvement in this program opened many new doors. Through cooperation with my mentors, we focused my growth in the areas of professional development. Through my mentorship, I was nominated and awarded the Muriel Green Outstanding New Science Teacher Award by the Council of Elementary Science International in a ceremony held in Anaheim, California, which both my mentor and myself attended. Through discussion with others in my building, we believe the most valuable piece was the amount of time that was given for my mentors and I to be together. The biggest single gift you can give a first-year teacher is time. When you support that time, when you support that gift of time with an experienced teacher, who can assist with the necessary processing and planning, you increase the value of that time exponentially. The time provided at workshops, the times provided outside for observation, and the time we were allowed to choose to spend for our own best benefit all, and contributed to my ability to become reflective and intentional with my teaching. These two things will stay with me as long as I'm a teacher.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rand. And this must be Ms. Andrews.
Jean Andrews, sixth grade teacher of Ridley. Welcome. Thank you for having us here.
And welcome.
And as an older teacher, time is a valuable thing for me as well. I feel older. I've been teaching for 39 years, and I've been the recipient of being a mentor and then being a mentor myself. This program, I was an instructional leader, or I am an instructional leader in Fridley half-time, and I teach half-time now under the QCOM program. But about 3 years ago, Deb called me and asked me if I would be a mentor and take that on. And my biggest concern about it was I have to leave the classroom to help somebody else. But I have to leave the classroom anyway to help the new teachers and our team. So being in a formalized program really made it worth my while, and she convinced me that I should do it. I was fortunate enough to have two new teachers that worked on my grade level near my team, one on my team and one next to my team, so I could get two people mentored at the same time, which is another advantage if you have people that are willing to do that. These two teachers that I mentored turned into strong, excellent teachers by the third year they had been teaching. They never considered dropping out of teaching, and we have mentored many people along the way in a non-systematic approach, and within 5 years we lose them because it's just too difficult to get them the help that they need. So I feel really, really strongly about this, that we're keeping teachers by giving them the time. It's a systematized program. If we don't have a system in place where we have an agenda and we have weekly meetings and we have things that we're working on, it just doesn't get done. It gets set aside. The other thing is it's a data-driven program. We base it on what are your needs. We survey the teachers. We watch each other in the classrooms. We find the needs and we work toward those needs, and we keep in mind that data-driven all the time. It's an articulated program. The first year I worked with Deb in the first five program, we did one set of things, and the second year we built on that, so it was articulated. It wasn't a repetitious program. And the last thing, it's dynamic. It's dynamic because the teacher that comes to us, I happen to teach math, and I mentored a math teacher, but I've mentored a social studies teacher, and I've mentored humanities teachers. It's a dynamic program, meaning it changes to fit the needs of the new teacher coming in. So for all those reasons, I hope it's supported and continued, because I'd like to see more of our new teachers come into it.
Thank you very much. Representative Burdell.
Well, I won't take any of your time. I know that Representative Wardlow is chomping at the bit, but I appreciate your time today and your support on this bill.
Thank you. We may have some questions. We do. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Ms. Ludke. Hi. She knows I was there at the induction training last summer. But, you know, I'm looking at the bill and
it's a dangerous thing to do, Representative.
It's like Brainerd will be able to participate if they choose, correct? Brainerd with its teacher mentorship program?
Wait,
Ms. Ludke.
Debbie Ludke from Department of Ed. The way the bill is defined is it's for high-need licensure areas and high-need area schools. And so high, if they fit the criteria of high need, then yes, they could.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm misstating my question, I guess. Will they be able to be a vendor, I guess, is what I want to know, for Brainerd with all of the expertise that they have gained through their mentorship program, be able to deliver these services?
Ms. Ludke. As defined in the bill, it says that service providers can be a collaboration of school districts, so they could form a collaboration with other school districts, or work with a service cooperative, or work with higher ed institutions. So yes, they could, but they not by themselves, but they could in collaboration with those other entities.
Madam Chair,
if I may be so bold as to ask Ms. Ludke, have you heard from Brainerd on this issue?
Ms. Ludke.
No, I have not talked directly with them, but I have talked about induction practices yet.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair, one last question. On page 2, Ms. Ludke, under C, line 2.27, the commission must approve funding for the new teacher induction program on a first-come, first-served basis. Now, you know, I struggle with that language, and I know this is the governor's bill, but I could still struggle a little. That, you know, the high-need subject area and the high-need school, where there's 35% or more of enrolled students, I'm hoping that we don't leave anyone out who truly needs these services if this is on a first-come, first-served basis. And, you know, I know that's not a decision you're going to make, but I do have a concern because these are schools that are not meeting adequate yearly progress in the two preceding school years. So, I just want to make sure we're serving the right audience, teachers, and students.
And I think that may have been a comment, but I don't know, Ms. Ludke, if you want to comment or...
No, she didn't have to.
Okay, very good. This is a model hearing. Representative Erdahl, Representative Peterson, you had wonderful testifiers and got done in the required amount of time. Let me ask if there's any testimony on this bill. Thank you very much. I think all of the many new legislators on this committee can relate to the need for having some time to talk about what's going on. I remember when I was a new teacher, they kind of gave me the keys to my room and said, here's your books, there's not a full classroom set, and go to, more power to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Wardlow. And while he's coming up, Representative Detmer, last week we had my birthday, whenever it was. Anyway, we were all primed to sing happy birthday to you on your birthday, and you went to a wrestling match and escaped. You were smarter than me. But Representative Detmer and his wife, both, like me, are on the highway to 60 very soon. So happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Representative Wardlow, should I move your bill or do you have a mover of your bill?
Please do.
I will move House File 811 for possible consideration in the omnibus bill. And welcome, Representative Wardlow, and we're so glad you are back to the hospital and back with us.
I was at the urgent care, Madam Chair.
Oh, urgent care. We heard you were in the hospital.
It's right next door.
Oh, okay.
But whatever sympathy I can get, I'll take.
Okay, yeah.
Well, House File 811 is one of the governor's initiatives, and I've got two math teachers and Dr. Ani from Department of Education that can present the bill far better than I can. One of them is a wrestling coach, and so you should listen very hard.
Detmer is all ears.
And they'll speak slowly for the two wrestling coaches. And for myself. I'm a wrestling coach, I can say that. So,
only when you're one of the family can you say things like that
exactly.
To the rest.
And I'll get beat up for it later.
He's also a jarhead.
Which, you got to show pictures now. Dr. Ani can present the bill.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Wardlow. Dr. Ani, please restate your name for the record and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives, I'm Beth Ani from the Minnesota Department of Education. I'm Director of the Division of Academic Standards and High School Improvement. And with me today are Dr. Emily Larson, who's a grade 9 and 10, math teacher from White Bear Lake, and our wrestling representative, Paul Agronoff, who also teaches grade 7 math, and he is from the St. Francis School District. Both of them are on our Math Standards Committee. Both of them are members of the Quality Teaching Network in Mathematics that the department has. I'd like to very quickly go over the major components of the bill and why we see a need for this, and then have both of our testifiers provide some added insight as to why we think this is important. This bill does three things. First of all, it provides professional development for math and science teachers, or those delivering the math and science standards. It provides programs and instructional materials and other kinds of technical assistance to schools and districts for improvements in the delivery of math and science standards. And finally, it appropriates $2 million in fiscal year 08 and $4 million in fiscal year 09 for those purposes. The need for this bill is based on several things. First of all, as you know, the legislature increased the graduation requirements effective for the class of 2015, or this year's fourth graders. In mathematics, those students will need to complete algebra by the end of grade 8. They will need to complete algebra 2 as one of their graduation requirements. In science, they not only will need to have a credit in biology, they will also need to have a credit in physics or chemistry as part of their three-credit requirement. A second consideration besides the raised graduation requirements and related to that is the new standards. The new standards will be in effect, and these math standards will be about more than just mathematics. They will also integrate information literacy and technology skills into the math standards, and they will reflect the college and work readiness expectations established by the P16 Council. A third reason is the increased focus on science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or the STEM disciplines. And finally, we believe the basic reason for this legislation is to put the change where it matters most, and that's in the classroom. Unless we have an effective teacher who knows effective research-based instructional strategies and classroom-based assessment systems, we know that the increased requirements just won't be fulfilled for all kids. So we want to put the focus on their professional development. The Math Standards Committee has requested intensive math professional development in order to make the new requirements work. So I'd like to now turn it over, first of all, to Dr. Emily Larson for her remarks.
Thank you, Dr. Ani, and welcome, Dr. Larson. If you could restate your name for the tape.
Yes, my name is Emily Larson, and I'm a teacher in White Bear Lake. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about a couple of the components of this bill. First of all, I think as a committee member working on the math standards, we recognize that the content in those standards is doable. And we've talked a lot about the types of things we expect all kids to learn. But we also recognize that there's a need to help teachers understand the best delivery methods for those things. I think some teachers may look at those standards and say, you know, I don't think every kid can do it. We believe that every kid can do it, every student can do it, but we need to provide instructional strategies and professional development to help teachers do that. And I think this bill really speaks to that. The other component is the technology, the increase in technology use within the standards. Just this year, as a math department, we have two brand new software programs that we're using, and we have found ourselves wanting more technology training to be able to use those things that our district has invested in. And I think providing that support and that opportunity for teachers would be really valuable. And finally, I just want to speak to the component of the bill that talks about teacher-led professional development. As members of the Quality Teacher Network, both Paul and I have been involved with leading professional development for teachers. And it's a very effective delivery system. I think if you have teachers working with their peers, there's a certain amount of credibility you gain as a teacher coming and working with other teachers. So those are three pieces of this bill that I think are really strong components from a teacher's perspective.
Thank you very much, Dr. Larson. Mr. Agronoff, please state your name for the tape and welcome.
Thank you. Paul Agronoff, seventh grade classroom teacher, St. Francis Middle School, St. Francis ISD 15, also the 6-12 math curriculum specialist in St. Francis. I'd like to share a couple thoughts with you from the perspective of a classroom teacher. A lot of you, it sounds like what you've been listening to today has been related to various aspects of education. Let me share you some things that I think are significant in math and science. Particularly, let me cite some research. Back in the early 80s, an NSF grant, a National Science Foundation grant, researched a question about teaching elementary science. They researched the question, why don't elementary teachers teach science on a regular basis? So an interesting question to ponder. But what they found out were three things. Number one, they found out that elementary teachers said we don't have the right stuff. We don't have, you know, ring stands and triple beam balances and beakers and Bunsen burners, and we don't have the stuff. The second thing they found out, elementary teachers said we don't have the right books. Like when you read something or you do something, it doesn't explain why it happens and what it is. But the most significant, far more important than those first two things, was in their research, they found out elementary science teachers said, we don't know enough. We're not comfortable with the content and the process of science. Now, that's not about Minnesota teachers necessarily. This was a national grant that was research. We need to look at what we're doing to support Minnesota's math and science teachers. And it's incredibly important. We tend to think of math and science teachers being at the middle school and the high school level. I don't know if you thought about this, but there are many, many, many more math and science teachers at the elementary level than the secondary level. Because every elementary teacher is a teacher of mathematics and science. We need to make sure we're supporting their growth. No matter how much we do beyond elementary, we need a strong foundation of good, positive habits of mind, mathematical reasoning, mathematical problem solving. Those things begin in the elementary. We can take that further, but we need to help the secondary teachers, the middle school, high school teachers, grow with these new math standards. They're going to be rigorous, they're going to be challenging, and it's going to require change in instructional strategies and content for all. And I hope you will definitely look at this as being a positive way to help Minnesota students improve.
Thank you very much, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is for Dr. Arney. How many teacher centers do we presently have,
Dr. Arney,
in the state? Because I know when we enacted this legislation, we could have up to 10.
Dr. Arney.
Madam Chair, Representative, it's unknown how many teacher centers there are. I have been asking representatives from various institutions if they have a count or know of even one teacher center, and I've not found one yet, which is not to say they don't exist. However, my contacts at MinSCU, the U of M, Education Minnesota, so on, we have not been able to identify any.
And Madam Chair, I hope since we're adding to this that we can discover some, because this is an important step in light of the fact that we have the more rigorous standards. So if our teachers indeed need help in teaching math and science, and as the gentleman said, teacher from St. Francis, used to teach in Princeton, elementary teachers do carry a huge responsibility for teaching math and science. So that's a comment I'm making. I have another question, though. To what extent are you working with the colleges of education to ensure that the courses now that they have within their curriculum for teacher candidates are rich in math and science, or richer in math and science than they have been in previous years?
Dr. Ronnie.
Madam Chair, Representative, in our division, there are other divisions that work with higher education. As far as our efforts, I know that we have worked with them on standards-based education in terms of instructional techniques, in terms of helping them to understand what the standards cover, and then also on partnerships, particularly the federally funded Math Science Partnership Program. We have some very, very strong math science partnerships. I was just at a meeting regarding the Rochester Math and Science Partnership. So that's one way I think that higher education is working very closely with our K-12 efforts.
Any public testimony on this bill? Any member questions? We're a quiet group today. Representative Wardlow, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I miss this committee.
We miss you, too.
There's, for some reason, Representative Heigert and I don't appear on this committee together anymore. I don't know.
One of you is banished every other year, I guess.
But just a comment that President Budick from University of Minnesota said one of the best indicators of college success is if someone took 4 years of math or a difficult science in high school. And if we're going to make that happen, we got to make sure that the elementary teachers, because I think Mr. Agronoff said it correctly, there's a lot, my wife teaches elementary school and has to teach math and hates it. And if we're going to make sure that she didn't hate it, but she sure asked me a lot of questions. We want to make sure that we give those teachers every opportunity to be the best teacher they can as far as math and science goes, because like my wife, she does extremely well in reading and things like that. And if it's that important, we better address the issue. And furthermore, there are 15 DFL authors signed on to this bill and only 9 Republicans.
Hey.
Republicans would better get on the stick here.
So I thought I'd point that out to the committee.
Thank you. Representative Wardlow, other teachers besides your wife, it seems like they need this bill because they don't have you to ask all the questions when they get home. So thank you for your bill, and House File 811 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and the meeting is adjourned.